Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
A world-class printmaker has an exhibit at the Mills Gallery at Central College. What is printmaking? What are the different processes? What influences the creative process? Let's go in depth with Craig Cornwall with Pacific Lutheran University, Tacoma, Washington. Craig, what's the basic printmaking process?
The basic printmaking process is the same through all a number of different ones, and that is that there has to be some kind of matrix built first. So in silkscreen, it's the screen itself. In etching, it's a metal plate. In woodcut or relief, there's some kind of a piece of wood or linoleum or something that you're carving from. And in lithography, it's generally either a piece of limestone or an aluminum plate. That's the basis for all printmaking, is there has to be some kind of a matrix that you use to create the image that allows you then to pull multiple impressions of that image from that matrix.
By pressing ink against paper,
I think, is how printmakers see printmaking. And they look at variations in terms of, so how can I do this differently and still get ink on paper?
And what are the virtues of the various mediums? The stone, the linoleum, the wood, does each have a different characteristic?
Each has a different characteristic. I think printmakers look at them in terms of mark making. So what kind of mark do I want, and what kind of process do I want to use that will give me that mark? So for instance, woodcuts are very distinctive in terms of how they look. You can see the mark of the knife in the wood. You can see the mark of the cut. You can see the hand of the artist as that knife passes through that surface of the wood or linoleum or whatever they're carving. With etching, they're very fine lines, very intricate lineal work. Very textural in terms of what that plate will do. The kind of marks that it will give you are very unique to that particular process. Lithography is probably the most versatile in terms of the kinds of marks that you can get. You can make it look like a charcoal drawing, you can make it look like an engraving, you can make it look like a silk screen in a lot of different ways, but it still maintains that idea of mark making. And it's very unique to that particular medium. So each medium has a different way of making marks, and artists choose them more for the marks than anything else.
Like I might see a wood grain.
Might see a wood grain. Sometimes if it was from a stone on lithograph, you might see a scratch in the stone that comes through that surface. Those kinds of things become the really important mark-making devices that you can identify prints from. There are marks that you can get in any of the processes that are totally unique to that process, whether it's the kind of line that you get, the kind of color, the kind of shading that you can do, can all be really unique to a specific process.
Well, then the medium itself is collaborating in the art, then, unlike a blank sheet of paper or in a much more vital way than a blank sheet of paper or canvas. Is that right?
Yes. I think there's a really strong relationship between printmakers and the materials that they're using. The different materials give them a different look, and so I think there's a really strong relationship in terms of materials. What do I draw this with, or what do I carve this with? What do I carve it on? What kind of materials? It is a huge collaboration between materials and the artist.
And do you have a preferred medium?
My preferred medium is lithography. Which is on stone. It's a very simple process in theory, but there's kind of a lot of steps to it. So a lot of times it becomes complicated for individuals. The basic premises for lithography is that water and grease don't like each other. So if I draw with a greasy material on a piece of limestone that's specifically quarried for lithography, the grease reacts with that limestone to form a grease-loving component. The rest of the stone is changed so that it loves water. So you have that antithesis, some areas liking water, some areas liking grease. So when I sponge that stone with a very thin film of water and roll with a greasy ink, the ink will only stick to my drawing, which is the part of the stone that loves grease. So it's kind of like magic. It's kind of hard to understand sometimes, but even once you've seen it, it looks like magic because you dampen this stone and then you roll and the ink will only stick to your drawing. It's like it has a mind of its own.
And so unlike when you put, say, pencil to paper, when you have a pretty good idea of what you're going to get with printing, you don't see it quite so clearly.
It's not quite so clear. It is fairly accurate, but one of the differences, particularly in lithography, and well, in all of the processes, the color of the matrix is insignificant because all of the drawing materials for lithography are black. So when I'm drawing in black, I can print it in any color I want. So I think in yellow and draw in black and translate that process to the stone. And then yellow may not be the color. Maybe it ends up being printed in green or orange. But the color is then separated somewhat from the drawing itself.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with printmaker Craig Cornwall. Well, let's go talk about one of your favorite pieces that's on display here.
One of my favorite pieces. I think this tall piece of the pit is an interesting piece. There are some things about that that I think are rather unique. If we look at the top, we see it's almost like a night scene with tones that tend to look like lightning.
And we're talking about a piece that's what, 6 feet tall?
It's about 6 feet tall
and
18 inches wide maybe. And it is the theme for it is actually from the biblical Joseph, who was sold into Egypt. And it's the period of time when his brothers are throwing him in the pit. And so at the top of this print, you see his brothers. And I thought about what kind of brothers would you have that would throw you into the pit? What would be the worst thing that they could do? And the worst thing I thought was they would dangle their feet over the edge of the pit, mocking you at the bottom as they talked about how they were going to kill you. And so there are individuals that are dangling their feet over the top of the pit. There are references of Joseph as he looks up at his brothers. And then there's the material that's used for that, the top of that, which looks like this lightning storm in the background, is actually a material that's called touche. It's pronounced T-O-O-S-H, but it's spelled differently than that. It's a liquid material. And when you draw with that, you simply paint it on, and then you give up control of what it's going to do. And what it does is it provides that reticulated pattern on its own accord. You don't have control over it.
Well, it's like coming out of the heads of several of the brothers.
Yes.
You didn't do that?
I didn't do that. The material does that, and so that's where that collaboration comes in. And sometimes it works really well and sometimes not as well. In this one, the materials added a huge component to this print because of simply the way that it created the lines of that reticulation.
Well, and they're dangling their feet. You have open hands like they've just dropped somebody in them. You have indifference, too.
You have indifference. You have people that may not have agreed but have turned their back on the circumstances. They may not have been the ones that threw him in the pit, but they didn't stop it either. And so it started actually as a fairly short print. And as I was working on it, it got longer and longer, and the pit got deeper and deeper and deeper.
And darker.
And darker and darker, because it needed that in terms of the visual language, in terms of what I was talking about. So my original intent was one thing, but as it developed and the relationship between the materials and the visual language dictated that it had to be different than my original intention.
And it became more creative.
Became more creative, and it also became a piece that had to be hung differently. It couldn't be hung normally. It had to be hung much higher so that you're much deeper in the pit looking up.
So you've placed us at the bottom of the pit.
We've placed each other at the bottom of the pit, yes. I've placed you at the bottom of the pit looking up in Joseph's position at his brother's.
And is this my imagination, or do we see sort of ephemeral vestige of Joseph rising?
Yes, there's that vestige of Joseph, whether he's in the pit or it's a dark blue subdued in the black. You can see faces on either side of him looking down as he looks up, and you can also find the components of a skull, because the interesting part of the story is they threw him in this pit and then they sat down and had lunch. and talked about how they were going to kill him. And it was only one of the brothers that said, no, let's not kill him. Let's make a profit off him. Let's sell him into slavery. And that profit was the only thing that saved his life.
Sold into slavery.
Sold into slavery.
From the bottom of the pit.
From the bottom of the pit.
Well, and you captured it.
And so that's one of my favorite pieces because of that. The piece right next to it has to do with that same series of Joseph, and it is a stranger in a strange land. When he got to Egypt, he found himself in a very strange land. He was a shepherd by occupation, and shepherds in Egypt were considered the very lowest rung of the social ladder. He found new religions, he found new clothing, he found new customs, he found new music. Everything that he found was totally foreign to what he had experienced in his earlier life. And so this one has to do, it's very Egyptian in nature, hieroglyphics, different writing, but there's one figure that doesn't fit.
Not at all.
Not at all, and that's Joseph. He found, when he came to power, the Pharaoh gave him a new name, gave him a new wife, gave him a new identity, gave him a new job, and in the end, he still only wanted to be known as Joseph.
And he's there amidst Egyptian deities and royalty, I presume.
Yes. So he finds himself in that culture of Egypt with different gods, different royalty, different expectations, and being one of great power.
With his shepherd's staff.
With his shepherd's staff.
And he looks rather forlorn.
I think he was forlorn. It was not what he had planned for his life. It worked out well for him, but it wasn't what he had planned.
Well, and this one is very brightly colored.
Yes. Egyptian artwork, I think, had a tendency to be quite bright. Different bright yellows, reds and blues. They used turquoise, and they used various other components in their work to make that very bright. And that was kind of, I think that was a bright part of his life. That was the part of his life that allowed him to reconcile with his family, with his brothers, and redeem his family from the famine that was there. So it's about redemption as well. When his brothers are reunited with him, his brothers are very different than the brothers that he met when he was in the pit.
How do your brothers become different?
Yeah, how do they change over time? Because they kept that a secret for 20 years, that they had gotten rid of Joseph. They had comforted their father as he had grieved the loss of his son, knowing that they were responsible for it.
And they didn't tell.
They didn't tell him. They never told him until the very end.
And so are they ever redeemed?
They are. Joseph forgives him. The family is reunited, and they're very different brothers now. And Joseph has the ability to not hold a grudge, but to forgive them for the experiences they put him through, and says, this is a great thing, because I was able to save our family from the famine by moving them to Egypt and taking care of them.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with printmaker Craig Cornwall.
Is Joseph a common theme, or did you just...
I've really been intrigued with Joseph. If you look at the work in the show, it tends to bounce all over the place. It's very eclectic. It's very different. I think that's a function of being ADD. I find I do something for a while, and then I think, okay, I've done that. I need to do something very different from that. But one theme that has come through my work quite often, and it's kind of reoccurring, and that is the theme of time. So that's somewhat Joseph. That was a particular period of time that was significant to me. But the passage of time I find really interesting, because time takes things away from us. It's constantly taking things away from us. But it's also constantly leaving things behind. So in some of the work, you might find cancellation marks from a post office, which are fascinating because it documents that something was there at a particular point in time and at a particular place, but time has taken away from us what it is, and all we're left with is the cancellation mark.
And that comes across in these prints over here.
In a number of pieces. Actually, this piece over here. It's very strong, and this is a kind of almost a floral one. It was designed to be an archaeological dig, a visual archaeological dig on a forest floor. And so there's layers of information, there's layers of things that time has taken away, things that time has left behind. So there, one of the ingredients of this, or components of this, is a photograph of four individuals. Everyone has a box of photographs that are too important to throw away because they're family photos. But because nobody wrote on the back, time has taken away who they are.
These people are in fedoras and different...
They're, it's old. You can tell it's an older photograph. I know they're relatives. I don't know who they are. I don't have their names. Time has taken that away.
They're your relatives.
Yes. Postage stamps. There's some postage stamps that show cancellation marks. Those stamps were in a particular place at a particular time, but what they were attached to is no longer available to us. So we don't know if it was a postcard, whether it was a love letter. We don't really understand what that was attached to, so time has taken that away. The idea of falling leaves and different seasons, time, the passage of time is recorded in terms of cycles, in terms of layers of information as it falls to the forest floor. And so there is also a bird skeleton.
A large
bird skeleton, indicating there's that passage of time there. There is... what's left behind is an indication of what's there, but time has taken a great deal away. There is a patch of actual hornet's nest, which is up in the upper right-hand corner, which is interesting to me because it's basically paper. So ink on paper, printmaking, wasp's nest, hornet's nest becomes a really valuable component to that. And then in the bottom right-hand corner, I wanted something that had a very short lifespan in terms of a literary kind of thing. So each of these prints has a different page from a Harlequin romance novel.
And this one titled Shades of Yesterday.
And so you don't know what came before that page. You don't know what came after that page. Time has taken that away from you, and all you're left is part of that page that you then have to kind of figure out, so what's the story, where is it coming from, and where is it going? Because time has taken those components away from you.
And so where do these ideas come from?
A lot of these ideas just come from things that you think about a lot. That idea of time I've played with quite often. Recently, it's kind of mutated a little bit. It's changed because I've included in that the process of aging. As I get older, I see what time has taken away from me. In some ways physically, some ways mentally, but there are always great things that it's left behind. So as my parents have passed away, I see that passage of time there. And as I get older and as I have grandchildren and my children grow up, I see the passage of time there. So that piece over in the corner here, a couple of these pieces, involve that same idea of the passage of time. And one of them is a very... From a distance, it looks just solid black. It's a black image on black paper. And if you look at it, it's actually the skeleton of death with an hourglass with its hand outreached to you. And the title of it is Come Dance With Me. And people see that as kind of a dark, kind of morbid image. I see it more as from the day that you are born, you start this dance with death. And some of us get to dance a long time. Some of us can only dance for a very short period of time. But we all dance. And so it's not meant to be negative. It's meant to be, this is a wonderful dance that we're involved in as we pass through life. So that was kind of an important image. And then I incorporated that one with something I've also been fascinated with, which is black mirrors. Black mirrors are something that artists sometimes use because it's a very simple process of taking a piece of plastic and painting the back of a black. Well, what you end up with is a reflective surface that reflects very similar to a mirror, but it changes how you see the reflection. It's darker. It shows you where the contrast is. So that there's also a legend or a myth about black mirrors that if you stare into a black mirror long enough, you can see into the future or you can see into the past. Well, that's a very nice connection in terms of that idea of time and the passage of time. And so I incorporated that passage of time with the idea of growing older and what time keeps and what time leaves behind, which then created this kind of image, which is, again, black ink on black paper, showing that passage of time. But in this case, it's showing the difference between old and young, the generational kind of elements in terms of how we work together or how we move from one period of time to another. So there's layers of individuals. As we have young people, we have older people. There's layers of information. There are, across the top, there's the different phases of the moon indicating that passage of time. And then down the sides, they're very subtle, but they are images from an artist, his name was Holbein, who did a whole series of woodcuts on the Dance with Death. And his take on it was, when death comes for you at the most inopportune time. It's never a convenient time when death comes for you. And so that idea of that dance of death and the reflections that are coming out of this black image on black paper and that passage of time and the different generations that are represented there becomes what I'm currently kind of most interested in looking at.
Thanks to Craig Cornwall for contributing to the program.
For KNIA, KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.